Hello, I'm Mike Reeves, host of the Nature Coast Morning News on 99.9 FM WXJB in Central Florida. And welcome to Conversations with Frank Morsani. Frank is a retired Tampa area businessman who was born in the Depression, built a huge business, made a gigantic fortune, and dedicated his life throughout to philanthropy. He's widely read, widely traveled, and wildly respected around the world, and has been for decades. Initially, with my conversation with Frank, we'll divide it into two parts. In part one, which you're about to hear, we'll fill in some of the gaps in Frank's biography. And in part two to follow, we'll find out his five secrets for success and how they can apply to you. And now, part one of my conversations with Frank Morsani. With me is Frank Morsani, businessman, philanthropist, but that just scratches the very surface of it. Number one, you've been around long enough to have been in the Korean War. You didn't start out as Frank Morsani, the man who's given away millions of dollars of your wealth you accumulated over the years and very successful businessman. You had very humble beginnings.
Well, yes, I think most of us did in that period of time. You know, people don't realize, I use this as an example, Mike. You know, in 1939, the average household income was $1,500 a year.
Wow. Now, was that good money back then?
That was, you were really living in tall cotton. I mean, that.
I love that.
That's the way life was. And I mean, people talk about, well, as an example, you mentioned philanthropy. Back then, everybody helped each other. I mean, everybody. And I grew up on a farm primarily. And, you know, everybody would come over and help you plow or cut hay or whatever it was, your father and later on myself. So I think that kind of set the tone for my life. And I didn't know that at the time, mm-hmm. of course.
So you were a kid and you saw some of the Depression. And apparently you saw your mom and your dad, I guess, on the farm. And they were helping people. You saw that. You saw it play out before your very eyes, but you weren't a grown-up in the Depression. Did you know you were in the Depression at the time that you were?
Well, yes and no. We never knew any other times, so that was just the way it was.
As a kid, you experienced things differently.
Yes, as a kid, you experienced things differently. You take for entertainment, you know, we take an old steel wheelbarrow off of the front of a wheelbarrow, and we take a stick and make that wheel go around. And, uh-huh. And that was the kind of...
That was big fun. That was your video game.
That's right. And then we'd play Annie over on Sunday afternoon. One or two people would be on one side of the house, the other, and we'd throw the ball over the roof and we'd play Annie over.
Isn't that something? That sounds like fun today.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Fast forward, you went through World War II, not old enough to serve, but you were in the Navy. Mm-hmm. Now, yes. Were you drafted or sign up?
Well, I was going to be drafted, so then I joined the Navy. I decided that clean sheets was better than a foxhole. Mm-hmm. So I elected not to go in the Army.
Smart move. It wasn't a huge naval war.
No. So I joined the Navy. I learned a lot, and it was a great 4 years.
What did you learn in the Navy that helped you the most?
Well, I learned several things about later on in business. In the military, you learn discipline, and I don't mean negative discipline, but discipline organization, the chain of command, how you pass responsibility. The military does the best job, I call it, passing authority to the lowest common denominator. Example, if you're an infantryman in war, mm-hmm. and the captain gets shot, and then the lieutenant gets shot, and then the sergeant gets ill, and it passes all the way to the lowest common denominator, which is the private. He knows what to do. So using that kind of thing, passing responsibility to the lowest common denominator, as I refer to it, assisted me in creating my management philosophy that I, over later years, embarked to my organization.
Now that's powerful because I'm a student of military history, that meaning I've read a lot of books, and it's been written by many historians that one of the main reasons why we won World War II was that exact style of management that Americans, number one, knew how to fix things. So when we had a problem, we would solve a problem, for instance, going through the hedgerows during the D-Day invasion. But also when the people ahead of them got shot, the generals, the officers were taken out, the guys improvised. And the people we were fighting, they lose a commander, they didn't know what to do because they were all used to taking orders but not thinking for themselves.
That was a big thing. As an example, later on, during the Cold War, actually, a friend of mine who was a general in the Army, they were doing some exercises in Europe, and they were doing some exercises with the Russians. So this one group was very, very successful. And so the Russian general asked the general that I knew, I want to talk to the man that's commanding that tank group or whatever it was. He said, sure. So it was a sergeant. He said, a sergeant?
No.
You know, we wouldn't even think of that. And so you're correct. That's where our systems over the years have been so much different than others.
Now, we've given away a lot of that since then, but that's a long conversation. We've given away a lot of, and sometimes not meaning to, our technology. So you got out of the Navy, you were on the aircraft carrier during the Korean War. Now, was your next step as an auto mechanic?
When I got out of service, when I went back to college, it was on the GI Bill, so I made $90 a month. I got that from the to go back to college on the GI Bill.
That paid for it all?
Not hardly, but it paid for
it. It helped.
Oh, yeah, it helped. But as an automobile mechanic, I made 50 cents an hour. So I worked.
Was that big bucks?
That was big bucks. That was the minimum wage.
God. Wow. They don't make that now because I paid some bills at dealerships.
That's a little bit different.
Maybe some of yours back in the day.
But I worked 3 hours a day from 2 to 5, Monday through Friday. Then I worked 4 hours on Saturday. So at 50 cents an hour, you see I made $10 a week to supplement my income.
So you're making $130 a month roughly and paying the bills.
That's right.
I'll tell you, I was at the University of Florida in the 70s, and I made $130 a month from Social Security because I lost my mom, and I think I made another $80. And I could live on $210 a month.
Yep.
I didn't need a car, if you do without. So you went from being an auto mechanic at a dealership, and somehow you rose up within management. Did you plan on being who you are today? Did you plan on owning dealerships and the teaching management, all that? I mean, was your success planned, or did it just fall into place?
It was no plan. It's just like we say in small business, what's your plan for the year or whatever it is today? We have a daily plan. We don't have a long-range plan.
It sounds like you've always worked hard, though, and liked it.
Yes, work has been my vocation and avocation. I love to work, and that's what I always did of all kinds. I just enjoyed working, and that's what I did. I didn't do anything else. I never played any sports or anything like that. Of course, I went to school in the country and didn't have any sports anyway, but never even thought about them.
One of the quotes in one of the many articles I've read about you, and also in reading your book, To Be Frank, which we'll talk about in just a bit, that really stuck out with me is that you never cared that much about money. And I've often thought, and with conversations with my wife, and we'll go by in my neighborhood, I live in South Tampa, some of the houses are pretty nice down there, and she go, what do these people do for a living? How do they make money? And I say, you know, I bet a lot of them didn't accumulate all that because they wanted money. They had a passion for what they were doing. Not all, but like a guy like Bill Gates with Microsoft, he didn't set out to be the richest man on earth. He had a passion for computing and building that stuff. And that was you. You had a passion for excelling.
Well, that's correct. And then getting in management, I had never had any idea I'd ever own an automobile dealership. It never even entered my mind until I was almost 40 years old. So, you know, I've been managing companies quite a while. Maybe I can own my own now, but I never thought about it. Money was never a driving factor in my life. It's nice to be able to buy, you know, have groceries, but money never drove me, and still doesn't to this day. It's just a byproduct of what one does.
What did you get most out of running, owning, managing dealerships?
I love to grow people and help them improve their price tag. That's the greatest joy that I've had, and I still see people all the time who used to work for me, and it's fun to see where they've gone and how much they enjoyed working with my companies.
Now, you didn't go to a business school to learn how to manage. You went to the School of Hard Knocks, and you're passing along your lessons, life lessons. That's part of what your book's about, life lessons, and applying them and helping other people. You're still helping folks.
Well, that's right. I think that's what our responsibilities are.
You've given away a lot of money. I don't want you to brag on yourself. I'm sure you don't want to, but you've done that because it makes you feel good and it's the right thing. For instance, your gift of $20 million to USF's College of Medicine, you're so respected in the philanthropy community that it inspired others to donate. In other words, they thought, well, if Frank is donating to this, this must be a good cause. What else are you proud of some of the things you've donated to?
I call it, as an example, the Performing Arts Center in Tampa. Mm-hmm. It's called now the Straz Performing Arts Center. My wife was always interested in the arts.
That's where I know your name from, by the way, because I go there all the time. I love live theater, the small, the big, the in-between. I love it all.
We felt really good about doing that because the arts are such an important part of society, and yet they get so little recognition. Mm-hmm. Don't realize what they contribute to individuals.
You did that to improve the life of the town.
That's correct.
To make it a more hospitable, more growing place, and you've done the same thing with the Live Oak Theater.
You know, I don't know how all that occurred, actually.
You don't know how you got involved in it, I'll give you this, if you guys will show an enthusiasm for it. So right. You did a matching donation.
That's right. Somehow I got involved and I said, okay, you need a home. I'll give you $100,000 and you match that, I'll give you another $100,000 to buy the facility. Wow. And then that's what happened. And now it's a very successful theater.
I love it. And I'm a huge, we've gone to Broadway a million times. The house we have down in the south is near the Straz, not quite close enough to walk to it. I've seen the Morsani Center many times, seen a lot of plays in there. And I love how that thing is growing. And I love how the fact that people go there. When businesses want to relocate, they say, well, what is there to do in town? And if you have a burgeoning theater community, that's something they can say to management, hey, this is a good place for us to relocate. We're seeing a lot of growth in our area. Our schools are doing better. That's one of the reasons, as a businessman, we're seeing more business people invest money in this area, isn't it? Good schools.
Oh, absolutely. We want to have good schools. We want to have a good workforce, a trained workforce. And we have some, you know, the state has been really behind the curve on vocational education. Mm-hmm. We have not done a good job in vocational education.
All this stressing about going to college, getting a four-year degree in basket weaving doesn't help you make a good living.
That's right. And but as an example, automobile mechanics, plumbers, and all the trades that are out there, mm-hmm. especially in today's environment, it switched several years ago, but where people are paid good wages, but we are still lacking in the trades in vocational education. But back to your point, companies that wish to relocate or start a company, they got to have a good workforce. And they want education, and they want things like the arts and then the sports, whatever it is. That's what draws people. And that's what we have to continue to work toward, is having better venues for those companies that wish to relocate.
And that is part one of this premier podcast of my conversations with Frank Morsani, retired businessman, worldwide traveler, widely read, and very respected philanthropist. In part two, Frank will share 5 business lessons that can help you, too, grow people. I'm Mike Reeves, and thanks for listening.